Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Scott Jacobs Show. How are y'all on this Sunday morning? It is Sunday, May 31st, and it is 9:26 a.m. Doing my podcast early this morning. Kind of feels good to do something real early, you know. Today's topic will be, let's see, I'm trying to think on what I want to do today, guys, but I think today may be a good news day again. All right, today we are going to do a podcast on Stephen Greer. He just came out with a new movie not long ago called Something of the Fifth Kind. It was something like that. I'll look it up and tell y'all exactly what the movie's name is. But here's a short clip on Stephen Greer and some of the stuff he talks about that I want y'all to hear. Because I'm going to start doing pieces on Stephen Greer. Because he's a very smart doctor. He's a doctor, yeah. Alright, guys, listen.
Liberty Mutual, take 96.
Besides the commercial.
Liberty Mutual.
Cut.
A Liberty Mutual.
Cut.
Here we go.
To be asked to come up to Washington to brief the sitting CIA director as a civilian on a subject because the president and he were being denied access. What the public isn't being told is that we have in fact figured out how those objects operate, and that would give us an entirely new and advanced civilization where we would not need fossil fuels, oil or gas, or coal or nuclear power.
I want you listeners to pay attention.
When I was doing this as a doctor, sort of shuttling up from North Carolina, where I was chairman of emergency medicine at the hospital, up to D.C., so it sort of got organically sort of overtook my medical career, but over a number of years. So I'm retired from emergency medicine now. I'm not in the ER. I'm working now to try to bring this information and, more equally importantly, the technologies that are behind these spacecraft and things that are being reported on CNN now, because what the public isn't being told is that we have in fact figured out how those objects operate, and that would give us an entirely new and advanced civilization where we would not need fossil fuels, oil or gas or coal or nuclear power. So it's a very big story. Most people think the secrecy around this is because the government has just been incompetent. That's not true. That narrative is a false narrative. The true narrative is that, I will quote from a top secret memo released during the past few decades, but it was dated 1951, and it stated that the subject was the most classified matter in the U.S. government, exceeding the classification of the development of the hydrogen bomb, quoting. So in order for our civilization to move forward significantly, we're going to have something better than solar panels and windmills. And the good news is we have it. The bad news is there are sociopaths who are in super secret projects that don't want us to have it. And our civilization has been greatly harmed, not to mention our environment, biosphere. So a lot of people think this is about aliens. I said, no, it's not about ETs. It's about humans and how are humans going to get out of the conundrum we're in, which is a very serious problem, and move forward as a civilization instead of sliding backwards. In 1998, my group, working with a constitutional attorney, Daniel Sheehan, that's in our new documentary, Close Encounters of the Fifth Kind, which is up on all of the platforms now, he and I looked at this issue, and if you have a minute to hear me out, what happened, I don't know if you can imagine the strange predicament a doctor is in, whose, of course, uncle was one of the pioneers in aerospace, with Northrop Grumman, working on the Apollo mission. To be asked to come up to Washington to brief the sitting CIA director as a civilian,
listen, guys,
on a subject because the president, he, were being denied access. Now let me repeat this. The president of the United States and the director of the CIA were being denied. Now I have a FedEx letter from the person setting up this meeting between me and the CIA director, Woolsey, that states that they had inquired about this subject, they knew there were programs going on, highly classified, and they were denied access to it. I didn't believe that could be true. I thought this was a bad John McCarr novel. And when I got up to DC and met with the director of the CIA, I realized nobody was joking. This is absolutely true. That's when I realized in December 1993 that our country, the Constitution, the rule of law had completely run off the rails, at least in this specific area. And it was pretty much what Eisenhower, if you looked at the last speech Eisenhower made when he left office, when he said, we're the military-industrial complex because it will become a threat if we're not careful to our democracy and our way of life. But that was his farewell speech. And this is a five-star general, World War II hero, of course, and a Republican. And no one really understood why he made that as his last speech. Well, it turns out one of his military guys who worked with him the last couple years of his administration was an old guy that I got to know. It was one of our disclosure project whistleblowers. Said, oh yeah, I was at the White House and Eisenhower had been pushed aside and had lost control of those projects. So I think this is the part of the story that people have a hard time, in a sense, getting their minds around, because we all grew up with our history lessons and our civics lessons, and the president is the commander in chief and blah, blah, blah. In reality, the emperor has no clothes, and there are classified projects that go on, unfortunately, that are not supervised by the president or the Congress.
What are your thoughts about Area 51?
Well, that, you know, that's a grid name. So the actual proper name is the Nevada Test Range, Nellis Air Force Base. And to be specific, in what the pop culture calls Area 51, nobody in my circle calls it that. The key names are S3, S4, S9, S12, Groom Lake, Mahoot Mesa. So there are two parts of that operation. The ones that there's part of it that is the energy transfer part, where they are studying retrieved extraterrestrial vehicles that we have, when we have these, and studying how they operate, all the different systems. And then there's another part of it where they are building up human, let's call it reverse engineered, as close as we can get, versions of those. So there are two sets of operations. There are almost no contact between the people in the dump, the deep underground military base, where the ET craft are held, that are working on the other. And there's sort of a firewall. But things are transferred, but the people working on the one are not just going back and forth. There are other facilities that are actually much more important than that one. Outside of Salt Lake City, outside Provo, there's something called the Dugway Proving Grounds. And there's a very large underground facility there that Tim,
I even looked it up, and it's real.
There's an underground facility at Edwards Air Force Base in the High Desert, California, and near Palmdale and Lancaster. And
see, guys, I do my research before I play these videos.
Facilities there are all also underground. Over the years, I've developed relationships, as I mentioned, with hundreds of people who work and are currently working in those facilities who give us information. Facilities have ET craft that are stored. Out from that base underground is a facility where there are 9 different ET craft that over the years have been retrieved, and a number of bodies that are stored there.
Are they living aliens?
No, they're all dead. No,
they're all dead. So we don't have any living aliens at any of our locations that you know of?
If there are any currently, I don't know about it. I do know that one that lived and survived after the so-called Roswell event, which actually did happen, but it's not what you think, it's not what you've been told. But one of them did live at least until 1951. And I have an Army intelligence officer who actually saw that being in a cage in near Camp Peary, near Williamsburg, Virginia.
See, guys, you know, there's a lot of stuff the government don't tell us, and, you know, if ETs were actually real, I mean, that would be awesome, but that would be scary all at the same time, guys. I mean, it really would. So, I think my show today will be about ETs, since I played a little Dr. Greer. Here's another piece by Steve and Dr. Greer. If you like that one piece, I want you to hear this one. This is a little better.
President Carter asked to be briefed on specifically the UFO matter, and the CIA director, Bush, said, "I will not tell you anything about this." There are people who are sort of, you know, like Dr. Strangelove, crazy sociopaths who have overtaken a lot of these operations that have taken...
Here's the video. Listen good, guys, because he's a very smart dude.
Hello, I'm Dr. Stephen Greer, founder of the Disclosure Project.
Look it up,
and the creator
Disclosure
of the
Project.
Film Sirius. And I'd like to make a wonderful announcement that all of you have been waiting for. The film Sirius, which went to one of the most watched and top picks on Netflix in the past year, and has been seen by millions of people around the world, we are now releasing on our YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/sdisclosure in its entirety, and it can be seen for free. We're doing this because we want the public to see the last crowdfunded film we did and have that as a foundation for anyone who wants to see it, but also to introduce the next film. And that is this documentary feature film called Unacknowledged, an expose of the greatest secret in human history. And it will have a book that goes with the film and will be launched with a massive disclosure event and celebration and concert. We want everyone to be able to see this film, but we would also like, if you can, to contribute to the crowdfunding campaign. Not only in contributing your network and networking with friends and other organizations, but also how you can contribute, even if it's just a few dollars, to this campaign, so that we have enough resources to do this next project, which is a campaign that ends illegal secrecy on UFOs and free energy once and for all. That is not just this one film and book that is going to be supported, but a whole initiative that goes on into the future. So enjoy the movie, Sirius. Many of you have seen it, many have
not. Look up Sirius.
And I hope that you can also support us.
It's a full-length movie on YouTube, he has.
Unacknowledged. Thank you very much.
And we may not play this whole thing. We'll see.
most people don't know what a dead man's trigger is. And even fewer need one. A dead man's trigger is a safety valve. A reason of security. A person prepares a recourse of such severe action that if harmed, they will release a cache of damaging evidence against those enemies. Given his situation, Dr. Stephen Greer is one of those rare men.
Military-industrial complex.
In his final public speech, a farewell address, no less. In a time when every second on TV was priceless, United States President Dwight D. Eisenhower decided not to brag about his victory in the Korean War. Instead, he cashed in all his chips to warn this nation of a hidden enemy.
We have been compelled to create a permanent armaments industry of vast proportions. The total influence, economic, political, even spiritual, is felt in every city, every state house, every office of the federal government. We recognize the imperative need for this development, yet we must not fail to comprehend its grave implications.
When I was with Lawrence Rockefeller at his ranch in 1993, he turned to me and he said, "The implications of this are so vast and so profound that no aspect of life on Earth will be unchanged by its disclosure." I said, "Yes, Lawrence, that's why it's been kept secret. It's not because it's trivial. It's because the implications are so profound." So there have been attempts to bring this information out for over 60 years. And here we sit in 2012 with the world still burning oil and gas and coal, when we have had technologies, sciences, and all the information we need to have had a completely new civilization.
What Eisenhower warned us about over 60 years ago, according to Steve Greer, has long become truth in Washington, D.C.
And why is Washington, D.C. booming? Because the rest of the country is sending their money here.
I know, and it's beautiful for the trees.
My name is Ted Loader. I've been working with CSETI program and Dr. Greer for 15 years.
Cool, huh?
Yeah. One always wonders if the public really knew what was going on with the government covert programs and how much money has been put into it, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars. I think the public would be a little annoyed.
Thomas Jefferson believed all men have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. The government they formed would serve to secure those rights. But when corporations or other specialized groups of men become more powerful than those who govern, our security is at stake.
Thomas Jefferson wrote about unchecked power of the corporation being a threat to the democracy and the banks.
You see, the U.S. Federal Reserve Bank issues every dollar bill, yet it is not run by the U.S. government or any elected official. It is owned by a private banking cartel.
But here I find the chairman of the Federal Reserve, who's in charge of the dollar, in charge of the money, in charge of what the money supply is going to be. The middle class is being wiped out, and nobody's understanding that it has to do with the value of money. Prices are going up.
So how are you able to defend this policy of deliberate depreciation of our money?
Part, a lot of it depends on what happens to the price of oil.
The four horsemen, or families of banking, who own and run the Federal Reserve, also run the four largest oil companies. Oil is also used to make and run machinery and current mechanical technology. Of course, there's one industry that needs these more than anyone else, the military-industrial complex.
You begin to get into this very scary scenario that has to do with the human condition of the proclivity to accumulate vast amounts of power around a handful of people.
All right, sit down and shut up.
And right now, these misanthropic sociopaths are running the planet into the ground.
When Congress or whatever else, or budget directors say, well, we've lost $100 billion in black program, what does the public do? What can the public do? We can complain to our congressmen, but our congressmen can't get any information.
Lobbyists, interest groups, campaign funding, the economic powers that be have learned to control the political sphere.
These politicians become almost like placeholders, and they don't realize that until they get into the White House or into the Senate Intelligence Committee. It doesn't matter who the president is. They're going to do what they want to do.
And that which is good for them isn't always good for everybody else.
I hope you guys are enjoying this.
From 1945 to 1998, 2,053 nuclear bombs exploded on this planet. The United States detonated over half of them.
Now I am become death, the destroyer of worlds.
When the first nuclear bomb was exploded in Trinity, Robert Oppenheimer, one of the founding fathers of the nuclear age, said, "We have done this before."
It could have been that Oppenheimer was speaking about weapons described in the ancient Sanskrit texts like the Mahabharata,
in which they refer to a bolt of iron charged with the light of 1,000 suns. This bolt of iron was hurled in anger and led to an explosive event, which is very graphically described in this religious scripture, specifically showing all the key indications of radiation sickness and the various problems with nuclear weaponry that we've come to expect.
When we started detonating thermonuclear weapons, atomic weapons, and developing these sort of destructive technologies, the civilizations that have been watching this planet for millennia said, "Oh my God, these people are going way off the reservation. They are now an existential threat to themselves, but also to other planets, potentially."
All over the world, we see very conclusive evidence that ancient people were in contact with extraterrestrial life. The Japanese said that their civilization was given to them by a people they called the Dogu, came from what they described as Ane Mono Tore Une, which translates as bird boat universe, meaning flying boats from the universe.
The ancient Sanskrit writings of India have elaborate descriptions of vimanas, or flying craft. These texts are thousands of years old. They predate any conception that we have of spacecraft or aircraft.
But evidence is not just found in ancient texts. It is also captured in our ancestors' art, as if it was plainly obvious that ET vehicles appeared in ancient skies. It is a foregone conclusion by most broad-minded people that we are not alone in this universe. The question is, how close are they?
And we all looked up at once. It was almost like an intelligence told us, hey, look over here, we're here.
I saw a few red lights in a triangle almost directly overhead.
I saw all these things, I ran inside and got my brothers and sisters.
It actually lifted up and it could actually turn.
I don't want to ask you to look away. I love my hands, but
I wasn't left to believe in you for as much as this, but I was satisfied basis.
The life I have isn't what I see.
They estimated 100 yards from the left wing. This is 100 foot this.
Concepts of the crossing point of light, the physics of consciousness, and interstellar communication all were developed on a kind of a vision quest we did here in 95 or 96.
Astronomer J. Allen Hynek developed the scale to identify the types of human ET encounters. From his original three categories, a fourth, more controversial, has been added, CE4. Even more controversial, Stephen Greer added a fifth kind to encounter, CE5, human-initiated contact. So, how is this done? Given Schrodinger's idea that the number of all minds in the universe is one, in order to make this type of contact, a human could potentially access that single inner consciousness through intense meditation, and then visualize his location down through the Milky Way to the planet Earth, to wherever he sits under the stars. In theory, then, any extraterrestrial passing by would be able to hear the broadcast and know exactly where to go if they choose to do so.
It's interesting how many people have never been out in a place like this where they can see the whole Milky Way galaxy. Most people who come for a week, it alters their life.
There's meditation techniques, there's remote viewing techniques, and once you start learning these processes and refining them, then you can make contact more quickly, more easily, and be more of an asset to the group.
Checking to be sure that there's no source from anyone else, so that when we do start having electromagnetic signals through this, we know that it's a legitimate source.
My name's Emery Smith. I've been with CSETI for approximately 3 years. Getting the baseline reading from us. My duties consist of a couple things. I am Dr. Greer's head security detail. I
also am their photographer. I operate anywhere from 2 to 6 cameras at one time.
Yeah, that's our craft. It's over the mountains in this room.
Many of the craft that are coming in are transdimensional, and the way I understand it, not visible to the human eye. And that's where this new technology, night vision, that's where that's coming into play.
With the advent of new technology that's out there, it becomes easier and easier for us to capture these beings and these celestial objects on film.
After you do the night vision, it has that green hue, of course. And after a while, when you get back to real life, you're thinking, why isn't everything green? This can't be reality.
I want to show an early one from Gulf Breeze from 1992. We went down there, and one of the fun things that happened is that I had about 40, 50 people. Let's go out on the beach. And we didn't have good cameras then, but you'll get the feeling of how exciting it was to have all these people, and one, and then two, and then three, and then four ET craft materialized right in the sky.
There it goes, 1, 2, 3. And look, there's four. There's four. There's four.
We have a confirmed CE5.
Holy damn hot shit. Hot dog.
Thank you. All right.
So the point is, is fun.
It's your responsibility to go into meditation, find a little bit of time, 10, 15 minutes, and remote view who's up there and how many.
I can attest to the fact that real phenomenon happens here. I really feel that his CE5 protocols are based on a spiritual kind of positive contact, and I think that that is an excellent model for any kind of communication, whether it be on Earth, the United Nations, or wherever, but in this particular field, it's with cosmic cultures.
And we use consciousness, meditation, visualization, remote viewing, certain tones, and we do it in a group when we can, or even as individuals.
It's just been this series of unbelievable events that are amplified by our meditation. It enforces this communication between us and the ETs, and it's so interactive.
I can feel everything, I can hear all the sounds just right there.
Perfect.
And then this being the little large one comes up and we had this hug and I shared joy and I'm like, this is crazy. Let's do what we can to feel as if it would feel that this is perfectly normal and natural.
Oh, sure.
And that, you know, this is
relaxed and get in that flow consciousness. Exactly.
So I was jarred by our group getting like tripped out and in that kind of like I was startled by some of the ways that our group was being, and I was going, and then there was moments where I was like, wow, I can only imagine how a visitor might feel.
The ETs pick up on your intentions, and if you're really out there just to learn and really want to communicate with these extraterrestrials, well, it's going to happen.
Shaktim chatatutra parashram chat yasam shukam goda panam mahantam govinda yogim ramakashashisham.
And we ask these extraterrestrial civilizations to join us as they begin to learn of us, to help us, to understand us, even as we endeavor to understand them. Welcome them here on this beautiful planet.
There's a glimpse of a preview of the series movie by Dr. Stephen Greer. You can find it on YouTube if y'all want to finish it, if y'all got interest in what you was hearing. It's free to watch. So, watch it. Hit me up. Let me know if you liked it or not. I'm on Facebook. I got a Facebook page, Scott Jacobs Show Podcast. You can find me on Apple Podcasts, Anchor Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Breaker Podcasts, Republic One Podcast. And I want to give a shout out to Anchor again for allowing me to do my podcast. Thank you. And I'm going to figure a way to set up a donation thing to help fund my podcast. So I'm going to get that set up pretty soon and get that rolling. And I just hope everybody keeps listening and enjoying my podcast. You know, still learning, guys. It's still a process. I ain't had time to get on it as much lately because I've been working a lot lately. So I try to get on here when I can to do my podcast. I try every day, but it sometimes don't work out. All right, guys. Thanks for tuning in. It's the Scott Jacobs Show. Thank you. Have a good evening.